Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. Welcome to another episode of Real Science Friday. Where's Fred Williams? He's not here again?
Wait a minute, I'm here.
Oh, Fred. Fred, hi, Fred.
I'm here. I made it back.
You were swimming with the dolphins in Florida, last I had heard.
Yeah, we were out in Florida. I actually wasn't swimming with them. My kids were. I was videotaping it.
All right, cool. Aren't dolphins awesome the way God made them?
Oh, they are. They have, like echolocation. Oh. They probably knew where I was by sending out an echo.
That's right. Just awesome. We'll have to do a show on echolocation.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, let's plan that. We're going to continue the show that you missed last week, Fred, on the origin of trees.
Well, actually, I did get a chance to listen to the show.
Oh, cool. I hope it didn't put you to sleep.
It did not.
Well, it should have been good because it came out of the CRSQ, Creation Research Society Quarterly. You are the webmaster for that whole organization.
Yeah, it's a great magazine. It's peer-reviewed articles, mm-hmm. and this one's another one by one of our favorite creation prolific writer, Jerry Bergman.
Yes, and co-author Tom Hennigan. Fred, maybe we could just quickly recap. We talked about trees and how they're different from bushes, of course. And then statoliths, the little anchors that the cells make so the seeds know which way is down and which way is up.
Yeah, that'd be pretty bad if it got that backwards, right?
Yeah. Then we've got polystrate fossils. Maybe we'll talk more about that. And bristlecone pines, how in drought conditions, some species of tree create multiple rings per year. That's important to know for dendrochronology, trying to date things with tree rings.
That's right. Isn't the oldest tree a bristlecone pine?
Yeah, that's right. What's the name of that thing? You remember
Methuselah?
That? Methuselah? They call it Methuselah, about 4,700 years old, they say, which puts it roughly in the time frame of the oldest possible thing based on the biblical chronology.
Yeah, from after the flood, right?
After the flood, from God's word. By the way, what are the largest living organisms in the world? Now, there are different things that vie for that title.
So it's not like the blue whale or anything like that. It's actually an aspen grove. You know, I thought in Colorado, but it turns out the biggest one is in Utah.
In Utah, because aspen, mature aspen, they send out roots, and the roots, they pop up, and they become new trees.
Yeah, and if you've planted aspens in your yard like I have, I'm constantly mowing those things down. It's amazing how the aspen tree just wants to spread everywhere.
I did that. I planted two aspen trees, and my wife, Cheryl, she trimmed them.
Trimmed them, huh?
She trimmed them 12 inches up from the base. She didn't like them, and they're trimmed, and they're dead.
Okay.
Yeah, they do that, aspen groves. And, you know, there's, well, the coral reef, Great Barrier Coral Reef in Australia. There's fungus on the floor of a forest. So they're trying to figure out what's really the largest. There's a Sherman, I think, is a large redwood tree. I think they call it General Sherman. We went there with our kids. But we want to talk about the origin of trees. The world's coal seams are basically the remnants of forest and fossil plants that have been wiped out in some type of watery condition that caused them all to be buried as they are. And evolutionists say that a lot of the world's coal seams are hundreds of millions of years old. And that's interesting because we find carbon-14 everywhere in coal.
Yeah, and we shouldn't find carbon-14 because that should have long decayed into nitrogen after thousands of years, not millions.
Carbon-14 only lasts thousands of years, not even 1 million. And so how could we find it in coal that is supposedly hundreds of millions of years old? So, Fred, a big picture of when evolutionists think that these things evolved, they said the first cell that could do photosynthesis, that arose 3.5 billion years ago. That's what they say.
Okay.
And then algae, true algae, because they do photosynthesis, they arose 2 billion years ago. So that took a little time.
Okay.
And then we have the first land plants, apparently, plants that are not trees, but they grow on land. They appeared about 500 million years ago. And after that, then they say trees evolved.
Trees evolved.
And that's been a long time now.
For a long period of time. So there should be a pretty well-documented fossil record, right?
Very well-documented. The evolution of trees, I mean, we're only talking about starting 370 million years ago. So this is pretty In the fossil record, supposedly the strata on Earth record life of what happened during all this time. So there should be really well documented in the fossil record the evolution of trees. And Fred, this is going to be a fun show because it turns out, no, the evolutionists admit we don't have a fossil record of how trees evolved. Can I give you one little example before we go on?
Sure.
A plant that was used by Native Americans for scrubbing pots, and it's the horsetail. And a horsetail is interesting because they're so rough, their texture. And that's because the way God made them, there's glass inside the cell walls of a horsetail plant.
Glass.
And so the horsetail, boy, it'd be fun to see that evolve in the fossil record. Well, there are two problems with it for evolutionists. First, it appears abruptly. There they are, horsetail. Secondly, the living horsetail that are in the world today, they are less complex than the more advanced, complicated, spore-bearing organisms in the past, hundreds of millions of years ago, than appear today.
So wouldn't evolution predict that things should go from simple to complex? Sounds like you're saying
right. This
is the opposite.
Right. For the horsetail, the more complex was in the past, and they appeared abruptly. These are two things that evolution would not predict.
And we see this all over the fossil record. You don't see simple to complex. We find things in the lower layer of the fossil records that are remarkably complex.
Wildly complex, like trilobites. You know, it used to be when they found fossil evidence of creatures in what they call the Cambrian or Precambrian, they would say, well, look at that. That looks primitive. Well, now with biochemistry and all, we know how wildly complex these creatures are. And we have a video called Darwin's Dilemma, which is just fabulous. It's a great DVD. You can get it from Bob and Yurt Live. Go to our website, kgov.com. Click on the store. Go to the science department, Darwin's Dilemma. You'll see how difficult it is for them because wild complexity appears at the beginning of the fossil record.
Yeah, and they still like to use the buzzwords. Even though we know they're not primitive, you'll still hear the words primitive and simple when these things are nothing like that.
No.
So, you know, Bob, when I saw this article about trees, it occurred to me, of all the years we've debated evolution, you don't hear evolutionists talk much about trees. As we just mentioned, the fossil record is so well documented for trees, yet we can't find tree evolution in the fossil record. It's kind of like marine invertebrates. We have tons of those,
right?
Well documented. And if you look in a college textbook on evolution, you will not find an example of invertebrate evolution. My college textbook, you find examples of vertebrate evolution where you have a bone or part of a bone where their imagination can run wild with
them. Right. By the way, if anybody hears any construction sounds, that's because there is construction going on all around us here at the Bob and Yurt Live studio. But we're going to press on.
That's right.
So I wonder if they cut down any trees. No trees were harmed during the production of this episode. So, Fred, there's a classic textbook on tree evolution, and it goes way back to 1923. It's called Tree Ancestors. That book by Berry, he includes a large number of drawings, illustrations of ancient trees, all of which are either extinct or nearly identical to fully modern trees, and none indicate evidence for tree evolution. And so even the seeds of ancient trees are virtually indistinguishable from their modern counterparts. And I love Bergman and Hennigan in this article because they lay it out so clearly. You know, the seeds are identical, and the seeds, they really tell the whole story.
Yeah, they didn't evolve over millions of years.
No,
right?
They've been the same. That's like the DVD that we also sell called Living Fossils. Fabulous DVD. Oh, you got to see Living Fossils. When you have stasis in the fossil record of no change for supposedly tens of millions or hundreds of millions of years, that's evidence that there was not evolution. It's been stasis.
Yeah. Well, this same professor, he had a collection of pine cones that came from the Cretaceous period.
Right.
They were almost exactly like those of the existing redwood pine cones. Isn't this a common theme we find in the fossil record?
Yeah, you are.
Bats not found supposedly 70 right. million years ago are
shrimp,
exactly like modern bats.
Shrimp cocktail.
Yep.
They got a shrimp cocktail in a fossilized version. You've got the plate and the lettuce and the shrimp and the cocktail sauce with the horseradish It's all there fossilized, Fred. No.
And it tastes just the same.
It tastes the same. That's because it's soft tissue. Actually, Fred, the shrimp that we eat today that you buy in the store looks identical to fossil shrimp, and yet they give them completely different scientific names. Not only different species, but different genus. They pretend that they're different animals because the one is fossilized, so they think, well, it can't be the same as this one, and they are identical.
Yeah. Another thing he mentions is the Wollemi pine tree. That's a favorite of creationists, right? Because it's supposed to be extinct for 200 million years. Oops, then they found one still extant.
They found it about 5 years ago in Australia. They said it had disappeared 200 million years ago, but obviously it's been alive.
It's been alive, and evolutionists say it's marvelous that these things occur, where it survived millions of years without changing.
Marvelous.
Marvelous. Well, we have lots of examples of these living fossils. In evolution, it would not predict such a wide number of living fossils.
And when you have things that were supposedly extinct hundreds of millions of years ago, and they're here alive on Earth, like a coelacanth, for example, and so many living fossils.
Yeah, they thought that was a ancestor of our ancestors going back, coming out of the water, right? Fish with legs.
Yeah.
And they said it had legs until then they found a real one, and those weren't legs, Bob, were they?
No,
they were fins. The thing was a fish.
Right. And so, Fred, when they always say, well, look at that, like they find dinosaurs now, T-Rex, Hadrosaur, Mosasaur, Archaeopteryx, with original biological material, and they say, well, look at that. It didn't degrade. It didn't decompose after all these 100 million years. And the same thing with carbon-14, in diamonds even. And it can't even last a million years, just tens of thousands. And they say, well, look at that. Why is there carbon-14 in diamonds? It must be contamination. But no matter how careful they are, the clean rooms they use, the world's best labs, there it is. So there's really overwhelming evidence that the Wollemi pine was not extinct. It wasn't growing 200 million years ago. God made it in the recent past. And so, Fred, the fossil record is pointed out in the CRSQ article. The fossil record shows a major discontinuity between trees and bushes and plants. So they're very different, just like the living trees and plants today. Major discontinuity, yet evolutionists assume they must be continuous because that's their belief. So they look at plants and trees buried in strata, and they see that there's an ordered layer. There is an ordered layer. So they assume that that must be the order that they evolved in, although because of seeds and resin and all that we'll get to in a bit, that's obviously not true. But they do see that there's a layered arrangement of fossilized plants and trees, right?
Yeah, that's right. In fact, Kurt Wise, who is one of the prominent creation scientists, he studied under Stephen Jay Gould, a prominent evolution scientist, and he noted that rather than seeing an evolutionary progression, what is really observed is an ecological progression from plants that are growing close to the water as compared to those things that grow inland, like a forest.
Mm-hmm.
So that's more what you see.
And we have Wise, like you said, he got his PhD studying under who?
Stephen Jay Gould.
One of the world's leading evolutionists, who, to his credit, did not kick Kurt out of the PhD program.
That's right.
That's unusual.
It is unusual, but Dr. Kurt Wise took the approach that he would be honest with Stephen Jay Gould that he was a creationist but would respect his authority.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Gould obviously appreciated that and allowed Kurt Wise to get his PhD under his tutelage.
Well, that's pretty cool. So the assumption by evolutionists is as you go up the strata, you're passing through evolutionary time. But what creationists point out is in reality, you're looking at the way things were buried in a global flood. Jerry Bergman points out in here, and he's been on this show a couple times in studio, he points out that trees play so many important ecological roles, and there's such a discontinuity with non-trees living and in the fossil record, and this is all evidence that the Bible's account is true, that God specially created trees.
You know, I think we take trees for granted. I mean, it's amazing what symbiotic aspects they have. For example, they shelter organisms. They absorb carbon dioxide, which is obviously very important. They prevent erosion. They produce oxygen, regulate climate. They're great for cycling and distributing crucial nutrients. They provide raw materials, and, of course, they clean the air. I mean, all these things we kind of take for granted, but trees are crucial for life on Earth.
And we wouldn't be able to have baseball or pianos without them.
Yeah, that's right.
Or it'd be a lot harder.
Shows you how crucial it is.
God designed these trees to play such a vital role for life as we know it.
Yeah, that's right. And so, you know, instead of interpreting the rock strata as moving through billions of years of time, creationists interpret it as a result of a global flood.
Mm-hmm. And so then what? If a global flood occurred, as the authors point out, then billions of fossils would have been produced and evidence of vast continental sedimentation and upheaval would be common. Fred, that's what we have. We have strata that span continents. And billions, if not trillions, of dead things laid down by water in sedimentary deposits all over the earth.
And Dr. Bergman notes that careful studies of large areas of fossil wood that underwent charcoalification are evidence consistent with a flood model.
That's fascinating, charcoal and the formation of coal. In fact, this is something that creationists, I think, have been leading the way on. And I think, I don't know, but I think even evolutionary scientists are beginning to see the value of the creationist research on this, because the burial of massive log mats, it's consistent with one of the world's leading creationists who came out with his theory of coal formation on a global scale.
That's right, Dr. Stephen Austin. And he actually came up with this theory before the eruption of Mount St. Helens.
He published in 1979, and in 1980, he had a laboratory experiment in the state of Washington.
Somehow he was able to cause Mount St. Helens to create his lab for him.
Just to prove his thesis. And so after Mount St. Helens blew, there was a Spirit Lake there. I've been there. We've collected rocks there. It's an amazing part of the country to go see, and how quickly life returns after the utter devastation. It doesn't take hundreds of thousands or millions of years, like on islands, too, created by volcanoes. They get lush pretty quickly.
Yeah, well, what happened? Mount St. Helens erupted, and what, big canyons were carved out, right, in a matter of millions of years?
Massive canyons were carved in a matter of hours and days.
Hours.
Including canyons with strata that show hundreds of strata up the canyon walls. And Spirit Lake was dramatically changed from the eruption, but it's still there, and hundreds of thousands of trees were knocked down.
Now, wait a minute. There's a creek or a river that runs down that canyon.
Through the
canyon. And I'm telling you, Bob, I think that pulled out a pebble at a time over millions of years. Are you sure that this happened rapidly?
Fred.
What's your proof?
Fred, you're saying that that stream that runs through Engineers Canyon at Mount St. Helens and that whole system of canyons, you're saying that that stream carved the canyon?
Well, yeah, that's what I learned in public schools about the Grand Canyon.
Fred, the canyon made the stream. The stream didn't make the canyon. There was no stream. The canyon, because of the canyon, that's why we have the stream.
So if I was an evolutionist who woke up from a coma, that's what I would think, is that this thing was carved out
over millions of years.
I'd see layers of strata and these canyon walls that are over 100 feet tall,
right?
A mini Grand Canyon.
Yeah, mini Grand Canyon. And we have photographic evidence that these things were formed within hours and days. Photographic evidence. We have photos of this and video. So it happened quickly, not over millions of years.
I know a geological scientist who told me that Mount St. Helens overturned 90% of what we know about geology.
Whoa. And Charles Darwin was adapting a theory on geology to introduce his natural selection. And it turns out when he was reading, do you remember who he was reading in geology?
Was it Lyell, Charles Lyell?
Yeah, that's right, Charles Lyell. It turns out that many of the specifics that Lyell posited have been disproved. And so it's all built on a series of confusion and misinformation that's mostly motivated on a desire to discredit the Bible as accurate.
That's right. Lyell preached uniformitarianism, which is basically that things progress over millions of years, right?
Yeah, right. And so now, thanks to Stephen Austin, we find out you got floating log mats when you have hundreds of thousands or millions of trees floating and vegetation. And that stuff, it gets water saturated, waterlogged, and it sinks along with other sediments that are sinking through the muddy water after a catastrophe. Then sometimes you get trees that end up floating vertically.
So why would they float vertically?
Because the base of the tree is more dense, it's heavier, the roots have rocks bound up.
Wait a minute. So if I was to float in a pool, wouldn't I go upside down? Because my wife says I'm dense.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
That's right. Well, the trees float vertically with their root side down. And so even though the roots are broken off, they continue for 2-3 feet after the base of the tree, and they have rocks embedded in them. So you have upright floaters, and then as they get waterlogged, they sink into different layers at the bottom of the lake. And so after a flood, a local or a global flood, you could have strata being deposited gradually with trees sinking at different rates. And that's what happened at Yellowstone. That whole incorrect interpretation of this massive mountainside at Yellowstone, where they said there were 20 different forests that evolved.
Yeah, they had a sign there that said that, 20 million years of...
Yeah, petrified trees.
Forest laid on after another.
Right, and we now know all of that was false.
Yeah, Stephen J. Austin actually put on scuba gear and went down to the bottom of Spirit Lake and watched this stuff happen.
And he sat right in that chair you're sitting in right now, Fred, about a year ago, and we talked about Mount St. Helens, and we offer his DVD for sale, Mount St. Helens. If you haven't seen it, you got to get it from us at kgov.com or call us at 800-8-NYART. But so, Fred, yeah, what he showed is here's all the plant matter sinking, and here are the vertical trees. And so the trees at Yellowstone, they didn't have any roots. So the public was being deceived, really, when we were told that those trees grew there, and then the forest got wiped out, and a few trees remained, and then the climate changed. Then 100,000 years later, a new forest evolved, and this happened 20 times, and each time leaving trees in different layers. I mean, it was also implausible, but now where's that sign?
Well, Bob, I remember. I think you played an indirect role in getting that sign removed.
We tried. We tried because... We aired the video, Mount St. Helens, and Cheryl and I went, you know, somebody's got to do it. We went to Maui.
Oh, you went to Hawaii. Yeah, that's rough.
For a Bible seminar and a creation seminar. And we were having dinner in the home of the local park ranger, the Haleakala National Park, the head ranger, in his home with his wife. And we watched Mount St. Helens, and he said, I'm going to work with my counterpart at Yellowstone. That sign has got to come down. And Fred, that sign is down.
Yeah, it's been down for a long time. That's awesome.
Yeah, it is awesome because it was wrong.
It was absolutely wrong. What was proven was that side of that mountain in Yellowstone, those logs were buried there by some kind of water catastrophe. Of course, we know it was the flood. Mm-hmm. But even secular scientists are admitting that that's the origin of those trees now. They were deposited there by water.
Some catastrophe. And so, Fred, they're standing upright, and they're going through many layers, and so the layers are deposited rapidly, not over millions of years. And this article continues talking about polystrate tree fossils and animal fossils, Fred, where you got trees that are sticking up through many different layers of coal, sandstone, like a typical coal seam, and you got one tree sticking vertically up through the whole series.
Through all those millions of years of layers?
Well, hundreds of thousands or a million years, supposedly, enough time for the climate to change, the sea to evaporate, and then lo and behold, there's a new sea and a new forest, and it happens like 6-8 times, and here are these trees standing upright through it all.
So how'd that tree survive without decomposing before another million or however many years?
Yeah, right, right.
The next layer buries it.
And
you said other animal fossils. Was it the jellyfish that we talked about one
time? Oh, yeah, jellyfish. A school of jellyfish in 7 layers that were supposedly laid down over 100,000 years.
So they had a lot of family reunions, I think.
Right. The one place in Wisconsin had a quarry. And so, Fred, and these here trees, I love what these guys point out. They're not more eroded at the top than at the bottom. So if you got a tree sticking up through successive forests that come and go and seas and everything else, And the top doesn't get more eroded after hundreds of thousands of years than the bottom. And just cold and heat and insects and water and rain. And it's not true. But my experience is geology students that I talk to, and sometimes professors, they don't like to talk about polystrate trees. Because one polystrate tree demolishes their theory of how that coal seam was formed.
That's right. So they got to try to explain that away. But we find thousands of examples of this all over the globe.
Mm-hmm. Indicating they're buried quickly, and then they're sealed off from decay, and then interesting chemical reactions occur, and you end up with coal and fossils and so on. And now scientists, not creationists, have documented that when you have certain kind of bacteria in mixed in with sand, wet sand, it hardens into stone rapidly, as in within weeks and months. Stone that is so hard, harder than sandstone, as hard as marble, almost as hard as marble. So this stuff doesn't take millions of years.
Well, another thing that I like that this article pointed out was they're finding this tree resin in the Carboniferous layer.
Oh,
now,
yeah.
What's with this tree resin?
This is big. Because resin, of course, formed from trees, and they say, well, before you had trees, you had, you know, hundreds of millions of years of other plants, but they find tree resin that they've now analyzed using the most sophisticated equipment, where they look at the atoms and the molecules, and they say it's chemically the same as modern tree resin, but it's not supposed to be because it's there in the fossil layers before you find the trees.
That's right, where the plants were supposed to be before they somehow evolved into trees.
Exactly. And so you find seeds that are too low, you find resin, so that stuff is evidence that there are trees, when you find the seeds and you find the resin, but the trees themselves float. They float, and so it's harder for the trees to end up buried.
That's right.
Than all the other plants that are wiped out in a flood.
Another amazing admission is evolutionists, they can't explain the origin of trees, so they think that a lot of the modern trees evolved what they call convergent evolution, right?
Oh, yeah. That it evolved, they evolved many times over.
Yeah, many times over. Kind of like how the octopus eye is so similar to the human eye, but they know that we're not related to the octopus closely, so they say that it evolved under separate lineages, same pattern. That's crazy.
You're quoting from a scientist, Enos, published by the Smithsonian Institute just 10 years ago, saying, look, the trees must have evolved over and over and over. So the conclusion of the matter, as we read in the Bible, is that God created trees. The first trees in the fossil record are trees.
They're trees.
They're trees. The enormous gap between trees and all other plants are because God made them differently, and trees are crucial for life as we know it.
That's right. It's not that there's a link missing between plants and trees. The whole chain's missing. There's nothing there.
Right.
And we've got tons of examples in the fossil record of trees.
Yeah.
We should have evidence of evolution, but it's not there.
The only missing link to them is God. God
That's
is
right.
the missing link. God is the link between bushes and flowers and trees. He's the creator. Thank you, Fred Williams.
Thank you.
Our website, kgov.com. We need your help to stay on the air. Please help us check out our science department or make a donation.